Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Sports Urban Legend, along with my co-host Macaulay Matthew. I'm of course Weird Mal Mo. What's up, Mac? How you doing on a special Friday night episode?
Hey, man, how's it going? Glad to be on this Friday night special.
Cool, man. Glad to have you. Today's show, you know, we're gonna talk about the MLB draft that went down this week, and you know, also talk about the week in wrestling with NXT following their pay-per-view event in your house on Sunday. Talk about what happened on Monday Night Raw and SmackDown, and of course our thoughts about WWE firing Paul Heyman as the lead executive of Raw. And, you know, as usual, we're going to preview the, you know, the pay-per-view event, the Backlash pay-per-view event.
Oh, yeah.
Give you our thoughts on what we think is going to go down this Sunday. And will it be the greatest pay-per-view event ever with the greatest pay-per-view match of all time, according to WWE?
We shall see about that.
We'll give you our thoughts on that as well. But, you know, we'll also talk about, you know, a little bit of the NBA. You know, they're trying to bring the season back. And MLB is trying to bring the is trying to start their season off too. But most importantly, you know, we want to hear from you. The number is 563-999-3529. That is 563-999-3529. So feel free to talk about any of these topics and more. Again, we'd love to, you know, we'd love you to make your voices heard. But with that said, let's lead off with the MLB draft that went down this week. I think it started on Wednesday, if I'm remembering right. And I think it concluded on Thursday. But, yeah, you know, Mets made some you know, encouraging drafting. One of them, they drafted Pete Crow Armstrong. This guy, he's a great defensive leadoff hitter type guy. Pete Alonso also called him to congratulate him, you know, passing the torch of what David Wright did for him when he got drafted a few years ago. I think in 2016, if I understood me right.
But, that's very nice.
But, you know, he's passing the torch from one Pete to another. You know, he called and, you know, gave him some encouraging words. Who knows, those two guys could be playing together, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe by 2023, you know. You know, if everything breaks right. Another person they drafted was, I think his name was JT Jin.
Yeah, yeah, I'm looking at the draft board here. Mets, you guys had a lot of the draft picks.
Yeah, I think I think he was a pitcher. He was like the guy they drafted last year. I can't remember his name. I don't know why his name escapes me. But he was like a guy they Matthew Allen. This guy, JT Jin, like Matt Allen last year, these guys were first round picks. But because of monetary reasons, I guess other teams were afraid to go after those guys because they didn't think they could sign them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd be out of the budget. Those guys fell out of, you know, out of people's price range, and they apparently got a steal with this JT Jin guy. So he should, you know, he should prove well, you know. Like, I guess a number one, number two starter.
Yeah.
Dude. Let's see. And what was I going to say? I think the other guy they drafted was, what was his name? Isaiah Green, I think his name was. And he's supposed to be this great defense, like Crow Armstrong. He's supposed to be a great defensive guy, but Green is supposedly, he has a lot of power potential. And you know, the Mets, Lord knows the Mets need some power. I mean, what Pete Alonso did was an anomaly. I mean, not that he's an anomaly. He's not going to produce power numbers, but historically, Mets don't really have homegrown Mets power guys. You know, with the exception of, you know, Darryl Strawberry. You know, I mean, even David Wright. He was, you know, he was a 20 home run guy, 20-25 home run guy. You know, probably eclipsed the 30 home run plateau maybe once or maybe two or three times in his career, but he was more of a doubles power guy. But yeah, for the most part, you know, Mets aren't known for power hitters. Obviously, they had Piazza, but you know, he's not a homegrown guy. He was from the Dodgers, originally drafted. But yeah, this guy has potential. And then of course, Pete Alonso, man, not only is he the best rookie power hitter we had, he's the best power hitter, period. Because no one ever hit more than 41 home runs in a season until
he did.
The question
now is if he can repeat.
Obviously he can't do it this year. He can't hit 50-something home runs this year with this shortened season, which – all accounts are going to do it, but it's going to be whether or not it's going to be a 50-game season or 72-game season or 114-game season. I mean, we don't know. But
yeah.
Pete Alonso, yeah, I think he's, you know, he's definitely a 40-home-run type dude. I mean, I can't expect him to hit 50-something, 53 home runs every single year. I mean,
right,
or hit
right.
60. I mean, that's too much pressure. But what I did like what he said a few months ago is that, you know, he wants to be a complete player. He wants to improve on his defense. He wants to win a gold glove to rub in people's faces who think he can't play defense, which he proved that he was a decent defender. You know, he really worked hard at it. So he wants to get a gold glove. He wants to win the World Series with the Mets, which obviously it's a tough task to do. You know, Mets have only done it twice. But each time they do it, you know, they're in the history books, you know. The all-time – you got to be all-time great, you know, Mets team to win the championship because, you know, it's not easy to win a championship, period.
Right.
But, he really wants to do it, man, and he wants to get drunk at the parade. And, hey, I hope he does it, you know. But, you know, we'll see what happens, man, because, man, 2015, man, it was only 5 years ago, but it seemed like it was 15 years ago, man. It was so long ago. And then,
yeah.
Of course – you know, prior to that was the 2000 World Series, and, you know, it had a bad ending. I don't remember what team the Mets faced that year, but, you know, those statistics aren't really important. You know, something about Derek Jeter saying that, you know, had they lost, you know, he would have moved out of New York, you know. That's how much he thought the Mets was a good team, but had they lost, he would have left New York. This is from his mouth, not mine's. But, you know, it is what it is, man. What can you say? Every time Mets lose the World Series, you know, with the exception of the Orioles, you know, they lose to a dynasty team. You know, the 73 A's, you know, they won the World Series 72-74. And then, of course, the Yankees from 96, 98 to 2000. So, you know, what can I say? You know, I just got – pop my collar, you know, as a two-time world champion, you know. Hope the Mets can turn it around. And
hopefully
then
sooner than later.
hopefully. And then another thing, Mets news, is that now there's new owners who are jumping into the mix, you know, along with this rumor, A-Rod and J-Lo rumor. But this one looks like this is really serious. These guys, they own, I think their name is Blitzen and Harris. I'm going to have to check to see what their name are.
What's their names?
I think Blitzen and Harris or something. Basically,
they
own
a law firm.
Yeah, they do. They own the 76ers and the Devils. But I'm going to try to look for their names quickly.
Okay.
But yeah, those, and I think they owned, or they might still own, the AAA Yankee team.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, you know, the Trenton. What are they, Trenton Rail Splitters, I think, whatever you boys are called. But yeah, they own the Devils in hockey and the 76ers. But let me look to see their names so I could give you guys the actual name. See, wait, I think I just saw it now. Come on. Oh, yeah, here it is. Oh, crap, now I moved out the way. Josh Harris and David Blitzer. Yeah, those are the...
So they're big. They're going to be big investors.
Yeah, but Pond didn't announce the update. He just said that there's like four or five suitors who are interested in buying the team.
Interesting.
So, hey, I don't know who's going to be the next owner of the Mets. You know, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah.
But whoever they traded to, I just hope that they're either huge Mets fans or they're really competitive people who really want to put a winner on the team, on the field, you know, and willing to spend the money and make the Mets, you know, bring the Mets back to their rightful place, you know. The city is jumping when the Mets are doing good. You know what I mean? Like in New York, in the city of New York, if the Mets and the Knicks are doing good, you know, people, the city is alive. You know, they're like, because it's a, you know, the Mets, man, when they're shot, it's a rarity, you know, that they're good. So when they're good, you know, people jump on the Mets bandwagon, you know what I'm saying? And then, of course, you know, you always have the diehard Mets fans who are always there from day one. But once Mets do good, you know, the city's jumping because, of course, you know, 99.99% of the time the Yankees are good. So, you know, there's a buzz in the city. And then when you got the Knicks, I mean, come on, the 90s Knicks, man. Like, the Knicks, I mean, that last dance, you know, even though they had, like, only one episode, you know, really focused on the Knicks, you know. The Knicks, man, if you go into that last dance, the Knicks are in it. I mean, they're on the losing end,
yeah.
But the Knicks are always featured, you know. That 90s Knicks team, man, they made history, man. They officially defeated the – they knocked out the Bad Boys. It was like in 93 or 94. Like, they basically eliminated them after, you know, the Jordan's Bulls ended their championship, their chances of winning a championship, you know, three championships in, what was it, 91, on their way to their first championship. But that Knicks team, man, they were tough. You know, when you went to the Garden, you know, all the other teams knew that they were in for a war. You know, nowadays, when the Knicks, you know, since 2001, with the exception of, what was it, 2013, I think, when we had Jason Kidd and Tyson Chandler and those guys.
Yeah,
2013. With that exception, that's literally the only year that when you come to the Garden, you don't just come to see the Kobe or you know, LeBron James score like 50 points on the Knicks. You know, you come to root for the Knicks. You know, you don't come to see, oh my God, we're celebrities sitting in the front row. Oh my goodness. You know, you actually care what's going on in the game. And you don't chant MVP for someone who's destroying the Knicks. You know, you're actually rooting for the Knicks. You're chanting defense. You know, that's how the Garden was jumping. It's sad, man. Like, kids nowadays, they have no idea. Unless they watch this Last Dance and paid attention to the Knicks part, they're not going to know the Knicks, you know, used to be a fierce organization, one of the crown jewels of the NBA.
Yeah, they have to go back to the tapes and look at that.
Exactly. Literally tapes. You got to go back to the tapes, the VHS tapes. And on DVDs, you're not seeing any new DVDs
on
it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're going to have to fish for that on YouTube or DVDs to find old school stuff. But nowadays, man, when you think of the Knicks, man, you just think of them not playing defense, signing horrible players. But, you know, I'll tell you what, the people that they're hiring nowadays, you know, I think the Knicks have a chance, you know, to turn it around. You know what I'm saying?
Sent me an article, or I might have sent it to you. I don't even remember, but the Knicks are thinking about trading away. What's the play they're thinking about trading away again?
Which one, Mitchell Robinson or Julius Randle.
Julius Randle. A lot of Knicks fans want to trade him. I'm one of the Knicks fans that actually want to keep him. Reason being is because if you trade him, who is going to give you that low post presence? We don't have a low post guy who could operate in a low post like he does. And he's a guy that can average 20 and 10. Who are you going to trade for to give you those numbers? I know they're talking about trading for Towns. That's never going to happen. That's not going to happen.
And we did not rehearse this. We both said that's not going to happen at the same exact time.
No, it's not going to happen. So
it isn't.
You might as well, he only has 2 more years left. You might as well just eat the contract and see how he does for these next 2 years. I mean,
that's true.
Just eat the contract, see how he might actually turn out to be a good player next year. I mean, this was his first year. I mean, even going back to like Knicks players in their first years, they weren't really good. Look at Larry Johnson when he first came to the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have a great first season. You know, there's a lot of guys that could go back and tell you that they didn't have a first great. Allen Houston, he didn't have a first great season in New York. You know,
right.
So give this guy a sec, see how he does well in the second season, and then you can talk about getting rid of him. But, you know, this is still his first season, and he still put up decent numbers, 19 points and what, 8 or 9 rebounds, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But he does commit to turn. He does turn over the ball a lot, which
that's
he
my big
to,
big
know.
Complaint with him. To be honest with you,
yeah, of course. I mean, he needs to fix that. But I mean, he has talent, and if you put him on any other team, I mean, he can help a championship team. So
yeah, I agree with that. On a championship team, he would be the third or fourth best option on your team.
Yeah, imagine him going to the Nets. We will kick ourselves in the foot if he goes to the Nets.
Mm-hmm. Or to the Lakers. You trade him to the Lakers. I mean, that's another weapon for them.
Yeah, I think he was drafted by the Lakers, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he
was a teammate of Kobe, and after Kobe passed away earlier this year, he said that he idolized him.
Yeah.
You know, so I really that depth, you know, obviously hit him harder than. You know, us, people who watch the game and appreciate what Kobe did for the game of basketball. But yeah, it took it to a whole nother level because that was his idol and that was his teammate. So
yeah.
But I'm with you. I mean, I was on the fence of, you know, getting rid of that contract because this dude's making $22 million contract. But Denge, you don't want to trade this guy and get nothing back because. History shown when you try to trade people with the Knicks, you get a worse contract or contracts back. So,
yeah.
You know, I have faith in Leon Rose, even though he's a rookie GM. But the people he's hiring around himself are have history, you know, doing well.
Yeah.
you know, kind of similar to Brody Van Wagenen with the Mets. You know, they're both rookie GMs, but they're the smart thing that they're doing is that they're hiring people who have success with other organizations, and you know they're adding to the front office. So, you know, hopefully that can lead to a championship for both franchises, because Lord knows they need it, and I need it as a fan of both of those teams. So
we all need it.
Yes, we definitely do. Because it's embarrassing, man. You're a New York team. Come on, man. You gotta spend the money. So.
Yeah, for real.
It is what it is, man. Come on. Let's do this. But, yeah, shifting gears. To the WWE. And the big news that came out this week in WWE, actually, it came out, I think, earlier today, if memory serves me right. They fired Paul Heyman, you know, as the Raw executive. You know, obviously, he's still going to be a quote-unquote in-ring performer. I think they mean to say an in-ring talent, because obviously he doesn't perform in the ring. You know, he's just the advocate of Brock Lesnar. I mean, obviously, he's arguably the greatest, or one of the greatest, managers of all time. But
no question.
But it's insane that they got rid of him, because, in my most humble opinion, I thought he was doing a great job, because the biggest problem with Raw and WWE is that they just keep regurgitating the same people over and over and over and over again, That's what he was doing. He was legit doing that. You know, you see Aleister Black being promoted. Bobby Lashley has a title match right now.
Yeah.
You know, which we're gonna get into in a few minutes. You know, he has an opportunity, his first title opportunity in 13 years. You know, MVP is being utilized. Obviously, you know, MVP has, you know, tasted many claymores in his return, but it's great to see MVP being utilized like that as a manager / you know, active wrestler. After, you know, a few months ago he said that he retired, but you know, he was going to be a producer, but now he's solely, you know, focused on being an in-ring performer and a manager. So WWE, to me, the future was bright with WWE. I think Vince McMahon jumped the gun here, you know, because of the ratings were going down. Obviously, because of the, you know, the coronavirus, you know, there aren't fans in the audience. You know, they recently, you know, got some in-ring performers to you know, cosplay as the audience members, which, you know, we've been saying that for the longest time. I mean, AEW was ahead of the curve with that one. You know, and WWE actually did that. I really, you know, it was really promising, you know, seeing, you know, the people that Vince McMahon gave up were being utilized, like Cedric Alexander, Apollo Crews, Ricochet. You know, they were using those people. Drew McIntyre finally got his title opportunity, fulfilled his chosen one tag that he had many, many moons ago. You know, when he started. And, I just think it was a really bad move getting rid of him, because Paul Heyman's biggest strength, other than his mic skills, is that he elevates talent. That's what he did with ECW. He knows the talent's strength and weaknesses, and he accentuates the talent's individual strengths, and that's how you make a stars. But,
yeah.
I mean, it's a bad move, man. WWE is gonna regret that decision. What's your thoughts?
I don't know if this is more of a ratings thing or if this is more of a financial thing. I mean, it could be financial. I don't know how much you're paying Heyman. But, you know, maybe it was just to cut cost. You know, maybe it's just cheaper to, you know, have Pritchard run both SmackDown and Raw, and pay Heyman to run both. You know, I don't know. I'm just, I'm right now, you know, I'm just thinking out loud. He's speculating, but, you know, I think it was more financial than anything. You know, I mean, the ratings, I haven't looked at the ratings, so I don't know how well SmackDown and Raw are doing, you know, but I don't think that was it. I think it probably was more financial, you know, right now. And right now, you know, WWE, you saw a couple months ago, they let all those, you know, all those talent go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of this COVID-19, it's hurt them financially. So this is another financial move. But yeah, I thought Heyman was doing a pretty good job, you know, in recent months, despite this COVID-19 ruining everything. You know, him developing, you know, certain wrestlers, especially Aleister Black. I mean, this guy, you know, he's been I don't know, he's been a shining star. You know, he came out of nowhere. And if Heyman is behind him, then, you know, Vince should have definitely kept him, kept Heyman as the executive. What is titled? Executive director?
Something like that. Executive, maybe executive director of Raw, something like that.
I mean, if Heyman was behind Aleister Black, then you should have definitely kept him because, you know, Aleister Black is going to have a title run very soon.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know. I don't know what they expect out of Pritchard, you know. I don't know much about Pritchard other than him as a wrestler. I don't know what he does behind the scenes, so time will tell how, you know, he develops this roster on both Raw and SmackDown and how, you know, how these events are going to turn out going forward. You know, what storylines we have, you know, what type of matches we have, what wrestlers, you know, he's going to put forward and put forward to lead the company. You know, we'll see. We'll see as we move forward, you know, during the year.
Yeah, the rumor is that you know, the ratings had something to do with it, and plus he liked how Bruce Pritchard was running SmackDown after they fired Eric Bischoff, after Eric Bischoff had 4 months on the job. And prior to that, Bruce Pritchard was a long-time producer for them. So they just recently got him back, you know. So apparently they just want a unified voice of having Bruce Pritchard have, you know, control both shows, because supposedly right now SmackDown's rating is slightly better than Raw, but both ratings have been you know, really down, you know.
Yeah.
I think maybe SmackDown maybe is a little under 2 million and Raw is like in the 1 millionth range or something like that. But yeah, it's yeah, they basically, that, you know, the ratings thing is what killed, you know, Paul Heyman's time, and maybe even, you know, their ideology clashed too, because Vince McMahon has his own way of, you know, doing, you know, his, you know, his stuff, having, like, you know, lewd humor with vomiting and farting and, you know, immature kind of comedy. Whereas Paul Heyman, I mean, he's more about, you know, elevating young talent and not relying on the same veteran guys, you know, to carry the show without elevating the young guys.
How many times have WWE fired Heyman and Bischoff?
At least twice. You know, in the, you know, the Ruthless Aggression era.
Right.
You know, it is the second time. I guess this gives Vince great joy to fire the former, you know, leaders of WCW and ECW, you know. But, yeah, man.
I mean, Heyman is still on, he's still in WWE.
Well, yeah.
He's not executive of
SmackDown anymore, but he will still be managing Brock Lesnar when Brock Lesnar makes it.
Right. But now my thinking is, if Bobby Lashley don't win, it's probably gonna lessen his chances of having him fight Brock Lesnar, because Paul Heyman, I would assume, would be in favor of having those two fight it out. But yeah, we shall see. But I guess let's dive into Backlash. Okay, let's see. Cheers, we got for the United States Championship, we got Apollo Crews defending his title against Andrade for the United States Championship. If you remember on Raw, Andrade, he defeated his faction member, Angel Garza, and I think Kevin Owens, if I'm assuming right, for the number one contendership and for the opportunity. As a result, Zelina Vega got hurt, but she looks like she's fine now. But Apollo Crews was Andrade. I could see it happening either way, but I think Apollo's going to retain because he just won the title like 2 weeks ago or so. So I think Apollo will retain it for that reason.
I agree with you. I think Apollo will retain it as well.
Then you got Bayley and Sasha Banks versus Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, of course, versus Iconics, which, of course, have Billie Kay and Peyton Royce. I'm going to have to think Bayley and Sasha Banks is gonna retain it, because if it was just Alexa Bliss versus Nikki Cross versus Iconics, I think Iconics would have won the title again for the second time. But with Bayley and Sasha Banks, being shoehorned into this rivalry, where they really didn't need the tag team titles right now, to be honest with you, because they were building on the potential Bayley versus Sasha Banks feud. So to me, I don't think they really need the title right now. But any case, I think Bayley and Sasha Banks will retain the Raw, the WWE tag team women's belt.
I'm gonna go with the Iconics here, crazy as that sounds, but I still think this Bayley and Sasha Banks thing is going to happen at SummerSlam, and maybe in that Backlash where they start to turn on each other, and Iconics find a way to win, and Bayley will probably blame Sasha for something, or Sasha will blame Bayley. That'll begin to plant the seeds of, jealousy between the two. And then, that'll lead up to SummerSlam going from there.
That's a good point.
So I'm going to go with the Iconics to win.
Yeah, like I said, if Sasha and Bayley just win the titles, I would have picked Iconics to win it, because that's where they were, looked like they were leading into it until like last week, where Bayley and Sasha Banks out of nowhere, like a RKO, just win these titles out of nowhere.
You could have Sasha and Bayley lose at Backlash and Iconics win it, and then they'll probably ask for a rematch at the next pay-per-view, and then that's probably when things escalate between them.
That's a good point. I could
see it happening. That's at least the storyline that I have in my head.
Yeah, I could definitely see that happening, because like I was saying, I felt like Iconics was gonna win this match if Bayley and Sasha Banks didn't insert themselves into this feud. But I could see it if they lose, I definitely could see Iconic capitalizing on it how you said it would happen. But yeah, I'm gonna stick with Bayley versus Sasha. Bayley and Sasha Banks winning, retaining, I should say.
Yeah.
Now, this is a match I don't really care about, but, you know, the buildup isn't bad. It's in poor taste, but, you know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about...
Yeah, they're focusing on his alcoholic addiction.
Yeah. Yep, I'm talking about Sheamus versus Jeff Hardy. And, yeah, I mean, this is crazy, man. Like, you know, a few weeks ago, you know, Jeff Hardy was framed for, purposely running over or crashing his car into Elias's car or something like that. And it appears Sheamus framed Jeff Hardy because they said it was a red-haired dude who did it. but my thinking, like I told you earlier today, I think it's Sami Zayn because they said a redhead guy. Even though obviously there's a size differential between Sheamus and Sami Zayn, I would assume. I think it's Sami Zayn. But in any case, Jeff Hardy will win.
Yeah, I'm going with Jeff Hardy also.
And, you know, Sheamus is pretty PO'd about Jeff Hardy throwing urine on him.
Yeah, that was disgusting.
That was really disgusting.
Oh, yeah, obviously it's not really urine.
Yeah, it's probably apple juice, but
yeah.
In any case, that was gross anyway. But, yeah, that was gross. But, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. This is for comedy, you know, Vince like, because you know this is how it is in WWE, man. They're not trying to attract the fans, what the fans want. They only care about the audience of one, and that's Vince
mm-hmm.
McMahon. So you know this is what they want. So, but in any case, I think Jeff Hardy is going to win this.
Yeah, I'm going with Jeff Hardy as well.
And for the singles match, you know, obviously, this is for the Raw Women's Championship. It's Asuka retaining, you know, defending the title versus Nia Jax. And to me, this feud is too early to me. I think Nia Jax should have been an opponent that she faces at the earliest SummerSlam or Survivor Series or whenever she's about to drop the title, because Nia Jax losing this title, I mean, you know, losing a title defense, it's just going to make her look weak. And then Asuka, she just won the title, so she can't lose the title either. So they're basically in a similar position with Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley. Both of these, when you think about both of these matches, all four competitors need to win the title because the champions haven't had the title for a long time. With Asuka, this is her second title reign, not including her NXT title reign. And she just got the title, which is the same thing with Drew. And then you got Nia Jax, who rarely wins the title, and then Bobby Lashley never won the title. But we'll get into that momentarily. So Asuka really needs this title. So she shouldn't be facing Nia Jax, who should be a monster, who basically should win practically 95% of her title match opportunities because of her physical, you know, dominance and appearance. That should be like a final boss in a video game. There's no way.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be easy to defeat her like that. So if this was real life, Nia Jax would have won this, but Asuka, you know, Asuka should retain. You know, she just won the title. So
yeah, I'm going to go Asuka as well. And, you know, I'm a big Nia Jax fan. I've always been a big fan of hers. You know, she's my potato pie, or in Haitian Creole, a guobut patat. as much as I like her, you know, I don't think she's going to win this one. So I'm going to go with Asuka.
Yeah, I mean, what are they doing, man? They're rushing this feud too much.
Yeah, they should have at least held off until SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm. just like this year they were Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt. And speaking of the monster among men, he's battling himself in a squash handicap match.
Man,
it's him versus
a no contest, man.
Miz and Morrison, a 2-on-1 handicap match for the WWE Universal title. And remember, he lost his Intercontinental title in a 3-on-1 handicap match against the aforementioned Sami Zayn and Cesaro and Nakamura. So, I mean, this is just they could have come up with better competition for Strowman. I mean, they probably should have Bobby Lashley for him. Cause,
yeah.
I mean, Miz and Morrison, I mean, this is, like, last week they had, like, a whole Punk, Punk kind of segment of them doing pranks and practical jokes on him and all this stuff. It's like, come on, this feud should be a serious feud. This is just a wasted feud right here. We all know Braun Strowman is going to win. I mean, come on.
Yeah. This match, it's a waste. It's a wasted match for the Universal Championship. Of course, Braun Strowman is going to win, but I wish they could have found a better opponent.
Yeah.
I would even accept it if they just had Miz fight him.
In
a singles match.
Or Morrison. You know, Morrison never had, like, a title opportunity back at Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking about going back to before he left, like, 9 years ago. I don't think he really had any title matches. I mean, obviously, you know, he left. He was in M&M, and then he was the ECW champion. I think other than that, I don't think he ever had a world heavyweight or definitely never had a WWE title reign. So,
yeah
it would have made sense for it to. If this was a serious, this should have been a triple threat match, and it should have been serious. You know, Miz and Morrison, they're best friends, but hey. You know, you're not going to stand in my way from winning the title back if this is the Miz perspective. Or John Morrison, you know, being inspired by Drew McIntyre finally winning that title. You know, this is his shot. He might not get an opportunity like this, you know. They should have made this more serious. I understand Miz and Morrison, you know, they do comic stuff and all that stuff. But this time they should have been more serious. But in any case... Braun Strowman is going to win anyway.
Yeah, I agree. You know, going back to WWE or WWF as it was formerly called,
when they had
just four pay-per-views, you know, Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, and Survivor Series back in the day, you had time between these pay-per-views to build up storylines.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could have, like, a storyline building up for, like, 3 months. Before they actually fought. And that made it so much genuine, you know, and special. Yeah. You know, whereas now, like, they start building up these storylines a couple weeks before the pay-per-view starts, you know? And it seems so rushed and forced.
As soon as they even have the matches before the actual pay-per-view that you've been hyping up.
Yeah, right.
And then afterwards, this is a dream match. Once in a lifetime opportunity match. And then the following Raw or SmackDown, they have the rematch already. Instead of waiting for SummerSlam for the rematch like they used to, let's have a rematch and have a 50-50 booking. Okay, this guy won this time. Well, guess what? The other guy's going to win the next day. I mean, it don't make no sense, man. And then don't get me started on these matches that get ending disqualification all the time. I mean, last year a bunch – they had, like, everything ending disqualification the whole time. It was so annoying. You can't even enjoy watching the match because you know the match is going to end in disqualification.
Yeah.
I mean, they've had a few matches like that this year. But for the most part, man, last year was just basically cation all the time. It was like, oh, my goodness.
I know. Like, can we get a pinfall?
I know, or a submission. Like, come on. And then those matches turn into tag team matches if it leads off the show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's ridiculous. But Yeah, now the match I'm more interested in looking at out of all of them is Drew McIntyre defending his WWE Championship against Bobby Lashley, who has never won a WWE title. He's won Intercontinental title. He's won the United States title. He's won the ECW title, I think twice. But he has never won the WWE Championship, and obviously not the United States Universal title. As much as I'd love to see Bobby Lashley win it, because I think he needs the title more than Drew McIntyre, you know, I just don't see them putting the title on Bobby Lashley. You know, Bobby Lashley is going to have to wait for his backlash another time, you know, because, yeah, I don't – Drew McIntyre just won the title. I mean, it would be shocking. It would be a shocking thing to do to see them put the title on Lashley. But, yeah, Drew McIntyre, he's going to retain. I hope to be pleasantly surprised.
I'm going to go out on a limb and go with Lashley. I think Lashley will win it with the help of MVP. And I think there will be a build-up to finally have Lashley and Lesnar at SummerSlam. That's my prediction.
So. I so hope so, man. I really hope so. Logically speaking, man, it would make sense to do that. Because Drew McIntyre, man, I mean, even though his title reign has been short, you know, it would have been a short title reign, and this is his first champion. I could clearly see WWE not giving up on him. I could see him having more title reigns after this. But with Bobby Lashley, man, this is like his biggest opportunity. I think, yeah, I agree with you. I think it would be best if they flipped the script and make him shock everybody and win the championship. Because in all actuality, They rushed this feud. They should have waited until like around SummerSlam to do this feud. And Bobby Lashley should be the guy to take the title off him once his title reign ends. But since they put the title on him just so recently at WrestleMania, you know, Drew McIntyre, if they do this, they're bold and take the title off of him. This, you know, it's going to be short. I mean, if it was anybody else who just won their first title reign, I'd be like, man, this is – especially like Kofi Kingston, you know that's their only shot. That's their only shot of having the title or regaining the title. But Drew McIntyre, I think that the company believes in him. You know, he took his game to a whole nother level. You know, even with this pandemic, you know, you could see the fans were getting behind him. Even I was – you know, supporting him, and I never thought that was humanly possible. I never liked his gimmick, you know, first time around, or even when he was a heel, you know, teaming up with Baron Corbin. But, you know, that's a testament to him. But, yeah, I think the smart thing for WWE to do is to shock everybody and make Bobby Lashley, you know, win his first title. I want to say that WWE is, you know, going to do something bold and do that, but I can't mouth those words because WWE has let me down so many times. They just do so many predictable stuff. So, yeah, I hope I'm wrong. I hope you're right because that's the best thing to do. That's what would be best for business if I was the authority figure in WWE.
Man,
but that's
it'll
not gonna
be,
happen.
It'll be surprising, but it would be, I don't know, satisfying at the same time.
Exactly.
Waiting for him to finally win the WWE title after so many years.
Mm-hmm. And then you have Drew McIntyre back at the chase again.
Yeah.
And you have Lashley and MVP doing all these tactics to try to keep him away from the title. You know? I mean, and then perfect world, you have him face Brock Lesnar and make him beat Brock Lesnar, because Brock Lesnar beating Lashley wouldn't be surprising. I mean, that's what you expect to happen, you know what I mean? But if Bobby Lashley defeats Brock Lesnar, his legendary status to a whole nother level. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
By him doing that, like Brock Lesnar defeating Undertaker. I mean, Brock Lesnar was going to be a Hall of Famer anyway, but him beating Undertaker, that's rarefied air. I mean, only Roman Reigns has done it at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Other than him. So yeah, that would have been a great idea to elevate Lashley. The perfect way to elevate Lashley. And I think Drew McIntyre still wouldn't be affected because they believe in him. And even though he doesn't have any fans in the audience, you could see he got that connection just before the pandemic hit.
And he's a lot of fans were behind him.
Mm-hmm. Even I was behind him, and I was never a fan of his. So. But, and then not to mention, he defeated Brock Lesnar in 5 seconds. I mean, come on. I mean, five minutes. So, I mean, they definitely view him highly of him. So, best move is to put the title on Lashley. But realistically speaking, I think Drew McIntyre is going to keep winning all the way to WrestleMania, the way how they're building him up. But, let's do that. Last but not least, the greatest match of all time, quite possibly the greatest pay-per-view of all time, according to WWE, it's the singles match, the greatest ever singles match between Edge and Randy Orton. And, of course, like I was saying in the past, this, or maybe last week or 2 weeks ago or so, this match should have happened at SummerSlam or Survivor Series. I mean, this is the song and dance I'm basically saying. Like, they're rushing all these feuds too much. These, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is what this match is all about. Edge is trying to prove that he still got it, even though he defeated Randy Orton in a 40-minute false count anywhere match. This is what this whole feud is about. I mean, this is reminiscent of Undertaker fighting Triple H that second year in a row because Triple H was criticizing him like, oh, you know, you won the match, but, you know, you had to be carried out of the arena, so I won. Like, you know, that's like dumb logic. Like, why are you feeling guilty because you won a match? There's nothing to prove. Edge won the match, a hardcore type match in a false count anywhere match. I mean, he literally didn't have to prove that he has to fight in the match.
Last man standing.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's it. The last man standing match. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It was like you're right because they had to count to 10. You're right.
Yeah.
Last man standing. Which obviously, I mean, you're false count anywhere, but yes, it was. You're all right. It is the last man standing match. But yeah, I mean, that proved it. If he could fight in a last man standing match, he could fight in a regular match where there's no weapons and all these other stuff. But hey, man, I mean, and then not to mention you're putting the pressure on Edge, who's in, this is his, like, third match since the, you know, him coming out of, you know, I think, what was it, spinal stenosis, you know, that kept him out of the wrestling ring for 9 years, you know, after he competed in the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, and then now he's competing again, but this time at Backlash. I mean, come on, you're putting too much pressure on this guy.
Like, yeah, they should have waited until SummerSlam with this also.
Yeah,
I agree.
But I think it's gonna be a good match. Yeah, I think it's gonna be a good match. They're gonna try to do the best they can. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Edge hasn't wrestled in 9 years prior to Royal Rumble. And then Randy Orton, he hardly wrestles now anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, do I think it'll be a really good match? Yeah. But you're going to build it the greatest match ever? I mean, that's so much pressure. And I was watching, Backstage on Tuesday. And basically, Beth Phoenix, you know, of course, is Edge's wife. She was saying, like, he was watching a bunch of old school matches, you know, to inspire him. And then, of course, on Raw, Christian confronted him, you know, that he needs to step up his game, because if he doesn't, Randy Orton's going to defeat him. I'm trying to think what else happened on Raw or SmackDown.
Well, you know, Seth Rollins is trying to challenge Rey Mysterio's son.
Right. And he was trying to force a retirement from Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
He feuded with Aleister Black, which, I mean, I'm trying to think what else happened. What's happened on Raw? Oh yeah, the Street Profits.
The Catalan.
Yeah, the Catalan, which basically amounted to nothing because it was split 5-5, and they're still even at 3-3. So I guess next week they're gonna battle each other in video games or I don't know, slingshot. Who could shoot the slingshot farther? I don't know.
It's hilarious.
It's funny, but it's getting out of hand, man. Like,
yeah, it is.
It's crazy. I mean, it's really getting out of hand. I mean, like, what is this? Best out of 100? Like, how far are they gonna keep going?
Yeah, it's like every week they're doing something new.
And then Monday night it was like on steroids, because they had 10 events. Like, it was crazy. That should have been like the tiebreaker.
I know.
But yeah, they purposely made it a 10 event, so it split even 5-5. Man, Street Profits should have won this whole thing anyway. All this stuff is like, for these guys to win, the other team to win, it's like they're cheating, man. Like a turkey leg eating contest.
Yeah, no, I'm about to say this. Turkey eating. Yeah, I mean, those dudes are big. They're big dudes, so yeah.
Sword fighting. Like,
hey, black dudes can't sword fight, man.
I don't know if they Mace Windu.
Now, gun shooting, yeah, black dudes are good for that. You know.
But it's getting out of hand, man.
Well, I think the main tiebreaker will be a match.
Well, yeah, I guess that'll be the. I guess that has to be it to determine who's the best. But when is it going to happen? Is it going to happen at SummerSlam? Is it going to happen at WrestleMania at this rate?
Maybe they might wait to SummerSlam. Yeah.
Because this thing is going to keep going forever. Goodness. Badminton. Did they play tennis already?
Did they?
I lost count. And then there's these random girls like, I'm going to let you go because you're cute. You, not so much. They do that same running joke every episode. Oh, man. Let me see what else happened. NXT Velveteen Dream, he lost to Adam Cole, baby. That's what he says every time he enters the ring. You guys don't watch NXT. But anyway, Adam Cole is still the longest reigning NXT champion of all time, and it looks like they're setting up a feud between him and Karrion Kross, you know, Scarlett Bordeaux's boyfriend. With that whole gimmick, which he defeated Tommaso Ciampa in a squash match. And Tommaso Ciampa was one of the OGs of NXT. So, yeah, Tommaso Ciampa losing to Karrion Kross is not surprising, but the way he got squashed was surprising, to say the least. Trying to remember. Johnny Gargano and his wife, Candice LeRae, they defeated Mia Yim and the NXT North Division champion, I mean, North American champion, Keith Lee, after basically Gargano, he basically sacrificed his own wife and got the pinfall, you know, the school. He retains the TNT championship against how you pronounce the guy's name? Marquay or something like that? I forgot how you pronounce the guy's name. Trying to think what else happened in that AEW.
I saw some of AEW, but not all of it. Just like the ending part.
Yeah, there looks like there's gonna be another. Jericho. He not only did he defeat Orange Cassidy, but he beat him up with a bag full of bloody oranges. So
bag full of bloody oranges.
Yeah, because the guy's name is Orange Cassidy. So
oh.
He beat him to a bloody pulp with a bag of oranges. So, yeah, he beat him up. And then at the end, the Inner Circle, Jericho's group, they attacked, I think it was the Elite they attacked again. Matt Hardy was there again, too. He got attacked, too. But, yeah, I'm trying to remember what else happened in there. Yeah, it escapes me for the moment. But... yeah, anything you'd like to say?
Well, just thanks for having me on my show, as usual, on this show, as usual. And, yeah, check out my show, iMac. You know, check your local listings for that. And come back here to check out Sports of Legend, Saturday, 10 p.m., right? 11 p.m.
11 p.m.
Yes.
You're the guy, man. Check out iMac, you know, Google it. Check your local listings where that's at. And, of course, check out Sports Urban Legend TV on YouTube. Check that out. And, of course, come back here next Saturday for an all-new episode of Sports Urban Legend. Every Saturday is at 11. So he's Macaulay Matthew. I'm, of course, William Amo. And I'll see you guys next time. Peace.